two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, are you ready to add a sprinkle of joy to your day? Then you need to check out Add to Cart. Hi, I'm Sujan Pak.
And I'm Kulap Vilaysack. We're your hosts, and on this show, we talk about the things we buy, the things we buy into, and what it says about who we are.
That's right. Each week, we're going to have some honest and maybe, you know, a little TMI conversations about all the fabulous, weird, wonderful things we're adding to or ditching from our carts. You know, we talk about beauty products, latest health trends, philosophies we're passionate about. Nothing is off limits on this podcast.
We're diving deep into everything we and our guests buy into and exploring what it reveals about who we truly are. We're going to decide what's worth the investment, be it money or emotions.
Add to Cart from Lemonada Media has new episodes out on Tuesdays, wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
Hey everyone, this is Muhannad Al-Sheikhi, and this is I'm Sorry, a podcast about apologies. And this week, I started trying to cook for myself. And let me tell you, I used to hate cooking, and I thought it sucked. And now I've done it for a week, and I was right. It's bad. I don't like it. It's such a waste of time, and I hate it.
My name is Oha Lopez, and I have been watching people disprove that dogs are vegetarians online over and over again this week. There's been a slew of videos of women pretending that their dogs are vegetarian, and then when tested, guess what? They always go for the ham sandwich.
And I'm Kiki Monique, and I officially have a bagel tattoo permanently inked on my body. And I'm okay with it. It's actually super cute. I really like it, actually.
It's very cute.
Yeah. I tried to do like a, I was going to do like a transition from the bagels to our topic for the day and literally could not
connect
it.
That's a hard pivot.
It's a hard one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of bagels.
You ever been in an MLM? You ever joined a,
a bagel
a pyramid
MLM?
Scheme? Oh, God.
I would join. I mean, I might join that one. So we're talking, I mean, I think we've all seen Lulu Rich now, and it follows the story of LuLaRoe, which is probably, I mean, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, multi-level marketing MLM companies that has existed in this country. It started in like 2012, and it became like a $1 billion company in a short few years, and it was really fueled by them, you know, the founders, Deanne and Mark Stenham, you know, married couple. They have like 15 children, some of that are theirs, some that are not theirs. You know, they were both married before, they were divorced, you know, they combined. It was like Brady
People
Bunch on steroids,
dozen.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely think like Deanne and her husband give major sort of like, you know, my beach house is decorated with anchors vibe. Like they have a very like specific aesthetic. And when I look like even just, you know, as I was learning about the documentary and the, and themselves as people.
Yeah.
Like one of, I think they are radically interesting. Like the fact that they have like 15 children, that some of them are biological, that many of them are adopted, like, what was y'all's impression when you were kind of just hearing about them as people?
So, they were talking about themselves. They were talking about the kids. And obviously, the one line that caught my attention is when they talked about how two of their kids who were adopted are married now.
To and, each other. Yeah, okay, I remember this.
They followed up with, so within our 15 kids, only two are married. And I'm like, only two are married? Do you think this is good? Like, what is the only part? Is doing so much of the heavy lifting here. Yeah. So,
and we all know the cause of this, right? We all know that it's because of the rise of stepbrother and stepsister pornography on the internet. We all know they were out on the town. These Mormon kids were watching a ton of porn on their little cell phones.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, I got my very own stepbrother situation here.
Yeah.
I was like, I hope they're happy. I'm glad they found each other.
I mean, okay, that part astonished me, but like what astonished me even more was like, you know, of course, like after the documentary, I want to read more and more about these people. It was more insane to me that, so Deanne, her father was the great grandson of Hiram Smith, who is the older brother of the Mormon Church's founder and prophet, Joseph Smith. Oh, I mean, wow. That is a major, I mean, I'm not Mormon, but even I know who the prophet Joseph Smith is because it's the founder of the Mormon Church. The fact that her father is the great grandson, I mean, that's wild.
Yeah.
So they start this company and really they identified a hole. I would say they identified a hole in the market of these stay-at-home moms who really want to be able to look, it's like, feel good about themselves. It's like, yeah, this sort of like pop feminism, like you can be a boss too if you, yeah, just do this. And you know, because these women, some of, you know, many of them probably have degrees that they're not using, or you know, mm-hmm, just want to feel empowered in some way, and LuLaRoe offered them this opportunity to do that, you know. So, you know, Deanne starts this company really just by having these dress parties. You know, she really actually found sort of, it was like a children's dresses at like a swap meet. And they were these dresses that were being sold in stores for, she said, hundreds of dollars, but she's found them for 10 bucks. So she bought a bunch of them and people were like, wow, she made all this money from just these children's dresses. And then it, you know, evolved into her daughter needing, you know, her, can you sew me a skirt? She did that. And her friends were like, this skirt's so cute. So now she starts having, you know, dress parties for older women and like buying these dresses. And it really just really grew organically, yeah, which again, that's the American dream. It's everything seems kosher. I'm loving this story so far. Nothing's going wrong. But then as people see how cool this stuff is, and they're really, again, addressing this market, people are like, well, I'm staying at home. I want to be a part of this. How can I also sell your clothes? And now they realize, wow, cha-ching, there are hundreds, thousands of women who are going to be willing to basically become our soldiers, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be willing to sell our clothes. And all we got to do is provide it to them for the low, low price of $10,000 buy-in.
Also, you don't even get the product immediately. You have to wait for it. You have to wait for a while to join the company.
I mean, that was the wildest story in the documentary. I mean, in addition to the wait list of women who were clamoring to be a consultant, because it's not like you could just say, I want to be a consultant. You have to be put on a waiting list to pay someone $10,000, which, yeah, is like, I've never been on a waiting list to pay someone that much money. But you have to be on this waiting list. And then the woman who was telling the story about how she was camping, she had no service. She's all the way up in the mountains. She kept going down to get service because she was tracking her box that she had bought. And the minute it said delivered, she packed her family up and got the fuck off the mountain. It was like, we got to go home right now.
Mama's got to sell her beads.
That was insane. That was an insane story. But I think also, yeah, what was insane is like them, like the company founders, they were telling people how they can, you know, collect that startup cost, like $4,000, $10,000. And one of the advisors was like, you know, you can sell your breast milk to buy into the company. And yeah, I don't know, like if Nike, for example, started saying that, everyone would be like, that is insane.
That's insane.
I meant to look up too, and I forgot to do this. Did you, any of you, look up how much breast milk goes for online? Because I knew there was a market for, you know, because obviously there's women who want to be able to breastfeed their children, and you know, it's not always an easy process as like TV makes it look like you just pop out a kid and like, oh, breast. It's not that easy. So some women do legitimately go to this. And so I was just wondering how much you can sell breast milk for and how much breast milk would have to be sold in order for you to have a $10,000 buy-in.
It's insane. I wonder if like they there are like some other like ways they've mentioned that they didn't mention in the documentary where like they send them a whole list of like body organs. And you, if you really believe in this company, you don't need two kidneys. You only
need
one.
Both corneas. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I was just looking this up, by the way, and it says that the average price for breast milk is I see different things, but anywhere from $2 to $2.50 per ounce on average, but that the number can be higher in certain cases. That also states that if you're able to produce 25 ounces of milk per day, you can make about $23,000 a year by just selling your milk. So,
wow. I mean, the fact that this is their, you know, their first go-to to make money is amazing, but it also speaks to they know who their demo is. Yeah. Like they're like, we have these stay-at-home moms and they want to be in a company. And you know what they have available? They got that good old titty milk.
It almost doesn't feel like it's enough, though. Do you guys feel like when I saw that, I was like, it feels like it should be more money.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. That's $250 for an ounce. I mean, that's Lemaire prices.
I said $2.50 is what I said. Yeah.
Oh. Okay. All right.
$2.50.
Okay. When you said okay, so that's how much I think it's worth. Because when you said $2.50, I was like, okay, cool. Because yeah, that's how much you should be getting for that. The good.
You were like, hell yeah, that's
milk.
That's gold.
But
liquid.
$2.50? Oh, hell no. Like, what is it? How long do you have to be pumped? Oh, to make $10,000. Can we do some? I know I'm always making you do division.
I'm like, why is Kiki forcing me to do math on this freaking podcast? I quit. Oh, my God.
It's insane. You know, like, I feel like they've heard the term, like, milk you out of your savings or whatever, and they're like, we'll do it literally. You know, we'll just go for it.
Oh, my God.
So they basically offer, they set up this MLM structure where you buy into LuLaRoe from anywhere from $4,000 to $10,000. You don't know what pieces you're getting because, you know, that's all a gamble. But you get these pieces, you set up shop, and it starts out as kind of throwing dress parties that, you know, you're filling these dresses into Tupperware, you're taking them to people's houses, setting them up there, selling them. And then it eventually evolved into, oh, well, social media is here. We can evolve to online. So we can do these Facebook Live parties. And that's where it really start growing. But I think where they all went wrong is like, have either of you ever seen that movie, It Follows? It's like a horror movie. It's basically this movie where an entity has like cursed this person, and the only way you can get rid of the curse off of you is if you sleep with another person, and then that person is then cursed, and so you get away, and then that person then, in order to get rid of the curse, has to sleep with another person, and so the more people that sleep with people, the further the curse gets away from you. But if it ever catches up to that last person, well, then that's one person in the chain, and it'll never leave you. It just gets further and further away. I feel like that's how we would describe LuLaRoe, because really, if you were one of the first people in, you're good, but you have to infect all of these people underneath you, and they have to keep infecting people below them. And like, in a way, you were probably started off as the victim, but now you're the predator, right? Yeah. And so it's an interesting dichotomy there.
It's a cycle. Absolutely. Yeah, like we said, they have to invite their own network in. And their network is, you know, their friends, their close friends, their families. And, you know, they're kind of fucking them up, even intentionally or not intentionally, you know, but they know the risk. But I feel like part of it is also, you know, they think that they're helping them. They think they're like actually like making them money and all of that. But like you said, you have to give the curse to someone in order for you to be free.
I will say, I do feel like I've had at least have maybe like 6 or 7 messages on my inbox with like the words like, hey, hun, I know I haven't spoken to you since I was 12 years old. And I'm, you know, so sad to see that your aunt has passed away. But anyways, would you like to buy some of these like fancy lavender oils? They're great for stress.
I'm really surprised because, you know, MLMs, I'm realizing how big they are after watching Luther Rich. But I'll fully admit that, like, it was just this thing that I had heard about because as a Black woman, I just don't think I'm their targeted demographic. And so you as a woman of color, Oha, I'm actually surprised you have so many messages because I don't think anybody has ever messaged me to join an MLM.
I collect white friends because I think they're exotic looking. Okay. Like this is the, I know all of them. So I am also surprised you haven't received them out of the blue because you don't really have to be friends with a lot of people for MLM to touch you, you know, for somebody to reach out.
So I guess like why is it considered legal? Because, you know, like they are like multi-level marketing MLMs and then there is a pyramid scheme and, you know, like pyramid schemes, as we all know, it's illegal. It's not, you know, you can't do it by law, but MLMs are. And I'm still like kind of confused about like what makes what legal and what, you know, makes it illegal.
I mean, technically, you are providing a product mm-hmm. to, you know, the people who buy in, and technically they could sell it to other people and make money on it. So that's really the only difference, because with a pyramid scheme, you might be paying money, but then there's actually no product at the end of it. But these people are getting product, but the realization is they're, in order to stay within this pyramid, they have to keep buying a set number of products. You know, with the way the LuLaRoe sort of pyramid, or won't call it a pyramid, their rankings worked, is like, okay, you come in as the sponsor, right? And then in order to make trainer, you have to have 10 people below you. And then in order to move up, you know, above trainer to coach, you have to have 3 trainers underneath you. In order to move up to mentor, you have to have 3 yeah. coaches. And all of these people have to be purchasing, you know, X amount. It's like your whole team has to be purchasing at least 175 pieces when you're a trainer. Your whole team has to be buying 1,750 pieces when you're a coach. And so the only way you can do that is if the people underneath you are buying all this
yeah.
and shoving it in their garage.
Yeah.
And whether it ever gets actually sold, they don't care. Just we know that you have to hit these goals.
Yeah, so speaking of trainers, we reached out to someone who was involved in LuLaRoe and has appeared on the documentary LuLaRich on Amazon. And that person is Lauren Covey Carson. And we're going to talk to her after the break.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season 1 aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few, and of course my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And each week we are sitting down to talk all about life's twists, turns, and absurdities on The Deep Dive.
From exploring the depths of TikTok, which is our only news source, to navigating the complexities of grief and loss, we are just two best friends behind a mic processing life together.
This podcast is all about finding the silver linings in the madness. So get ready for unfiltered conversations about motherhood, careers, pop culture, and everything in between.
Here at The Deep Dive, we're all about community. We believe in the power of sharing experiences and the strength that comes from supporting one another. And we would love to have you with us.
So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you.
Welcome back to I'm Sorry. We're so happy to have Lauren Covey Carson here, who was in the Lulu Rich documentary. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you. I'm super excited to be here with you guys.
I think that it feels like the whole world to me in the last couple of weeks is absorbed in LuLaRoe. And, you know, for people who haven't watched it yet, you know, you were a LuLaRoe, you became a trainer. Can you talk to us about how you got into it and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I have always been in retail or store management. Like, I've always been in kind of like the business, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And then once I had kids and was like one of the, you know, I was like, oh, I want to be at home with my kids. And this gal was like, oh my gosh, there's this company and it's not like one of those kind of companies. Meaning like you have the product at your house. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have a store within your house and you sell it to, you know, people that want it, which is super sought after. And it's like easy peasy. Like, you've got the product, you've got the kids. It's not like you have to spend all this time on the computer. Just, you know, you've got a lot of time. Like, it's going to free up time, if anything, and you're going to make money. Okay. So July, I had my son. This was July of 2015. Mm-hmm. I really, at that point, so this was my second child. I was like, okay, I have, and I'm all about like independent woman, gonna have my own money. My husband's not gonna be taking, you know, he's not gonna pay for a pedicure, a manicure. Like, I'm gonna do me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in October, I got my inventory. And I actually, in the beginning, was like, I know it does sound crazy, like $10,000. Like, that's a shit ton of money.
That's how much you paid to buy in for your first kit, $10,000?
Correct, which is a lot of money. It's a lot of money. When you think about it, when it's like you are getting the inventory, you own it. Okay, it's coming to you. You are now owning a business, quote, like essentially a storefront. This is all like I'm selling you guys all salons, right? Okay.
Is this like recruitment?
Yeah. I am selling you. This is the pitch. This is the pitch.
Lauren, I think the most I've ever spent is like $1,200 on a MacBook Pro. And when I handed over that money, I was like, oh my God, I don't know why I purchased anything. I'm more of a spend in very small amounts. So if you say the amount $10,000, you're blowing my mind.
Yeah.
So, okay, but if you think about it, okay, so let's just say you're like, okay, for $1,200, like my Mac Pro, but that is going to now turn into, it potentially could turn into like $2,400 because you can make a business out of that. You can create a band on that. You can create, I mean, really, and this is kind of where the manipulation starts, right? Okay. It's like that slow thing of like, well, this is now on you. You are in charge now of what happens with this investment that you just made. And I just sold you this dream on it. It's now on you. You can do whatever you want. You could make $1,000,000. You could make $5,000. You could make like whatever that looks like.
Which for someone coming into this business, it feels empowering. You're like, I can make as little or as much as I want. It's all about what I put into
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Right?
And it's on you and it's woman power. And it's, I mean, if I'm jumping too far ahead, it's just like, it literally is like entering an extremely like abusive relationship where you're just like, oh yeah, he's taking me out to the finest restaurant or whatever it is. I'm getting wined and dined. I'm getting told that, like all the things, and you believe it because you also really want it.
Yeah. How long were you in the company? Like the whole like
3 years.
3 years. And which level did you get to?
I just had hit coach when I left.
Mm. Oh, wow.
When did the pieces sort of start making sense for you that it wasn't kind of like as legitimate or as exciting as you maybe initially thought?
I mean, I think from kind of even like a few months in, I was like, what is this? Like, what is actually going on?
Yeah.
How are they making money? How are we making money? Okay, I get that I'm making these checks, but also like, It is really hard to explain because it's not just like, oh, it went like one day it went from just being like this normal kind of company that you were in, because there are so many companies like that, right?
Yeah.
Where it, all of a sudden, I will say that it was just kind of like when they restructured to where your bonus checks were based on sales, not orders from the warehouse. that's when kind of everything kind of changed, where your mindset just kind of went to, oh, this is benefiting them, not us.
Has there been like a lot of gossip? Did you feel like there was like a moment where everybody was just sort of talking about the negative stuff leading up to the documentary? Like, what have you seen from your friends and what have they been saying?
Well, so what's so interesting is that I actually like told nobody about it. I was really kind of actually ashamed about it. I've gotten so many messages from people that were like, whoa. I mean, I was like really ashamed because, I mean, for so many reasons. One, it's like embarrassing, like in a way, like mm-hmm. you feel like you got duped.
Yeah.
Like I, like what? Like, no way, you know? And then, you know, there was like a lot of negativity around LuLaRoe, but also it took me personally, just me, to a place where I was like, I did this to myself. Because no one held a gun to my head.
I mean, I know you mentioned earlier how it felt like in abusive relationships, and all these yes. words you're saying are like what people in abusive relationships say.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
It was my fault. Wow.
Like, no, because no one held a gun to my head and said, you have to buy this inventory.
Yeah.
You have to be in this company.
But they did like curate something that really identified with your life. It knew everything to say in order to get you to buy into it.
Exactly.
And it basically like lured you and set a trap for you, you know? And so
yeah.
there is something really disingenuous about the way that they approach it. And then also the hypocrisy and not admitting that there's something fishy about the process.
Absolutely.
Do you still have a bunch of inventory like in your house? Oh, you have to look at it every day. I mean, I would be like, oh, it's like when an ex-boyfriend leaves and you have yeah. to look at his stupid shoes or shirts.
Right? You're like, just get rid of that. I have it in the garage and I need to just get rid of it. I need to donate it.
I heard there's some thrift stores that are just like, no LuLaRoe. Like, they're so overwhelmed, they won't even
totally.
Take it.
But I had this one lady message me, and then I was like, well, scared at the same time. She messaged me, and she's like, hey, I, like, want to help people out who have, like, lost out on LuLaRoe. Like, I can meet you and, like, buy inventory and blah, blah, blah. And I was like,
interesting.
Yeah, I think I'm good having people come into my yeah. house. And, like, I guess the biggest thing was that, you know, they should have just done the buyback. I mean, they should have stuck to their word, which was, like, buyback yeah. inventory, especially since we didn't have a say in anything. There was no say.
LuLaRoe was charged only in Washington State as operating as an alleged illegal pyramid scheme, which they ended up settling. Would you, if you were to say, like, do you consider LuLaRoe a pyramid scheme?
I mean, I guess my question has been too since watching the documentary, like what sets them apart? And I keep rewatching the part with the lawyer when it breaks down, like what makes them different from all of these other, like, because I know so many people that do like Young Living or like, like all these different things yeah. where I'm like, it's the same, it's the exact same thing. So I guess then to me, I'm like, well, it all is. If you're making $1 off anybody that you're signing up, if they're not signing up because they want to be selling mm-hmm. your product,
yeah,
then it's a pyramid scheme, in my opinion. If I want to sell Mary Kay, then I should just be able to call Mary Kay and be like, I want to sell your stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Why do I need to call somebody else to sign me up that and then they're getting paid off me?
Yeah, I think it's something like for the majority of MLMs or and pyramid schemes is both, is that there's only a certain amount of people who make money. So it's only like the first 1-3% of people who sign up for the scheme that end up actually making money, whereas 70-80% of people make $0, like actually $0 and only spend. And so,
or negative.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So, Lauren, this show, it's called I'm Sorry. It's about apologies. So, in your view, does LuLaRoe need to apologize for what they've done?
Yes, I think that there needs to be a huge apology. And I would say more so to, I mean, I think it's such a trickle down again factor. But yes, I do think there's a huge apology, because I think that everybody started this just like everybody gets a job for, you know, a reason. We want to contribute in some sort of way, whether that's to your family, yourself, your animals, your volunteering, whatever you do, whatever you're set out to do. I think that everyone does that with intention. And I think that when the intention has been, you've been misled, or there's just not been honesty there, I think that there absolutely needs to be an apology.
One more question before we go.
Yeah.
Do you think seeing the documentary will get LuLaRoe to change their ways?
No, I think they are so, I don't even know that word. Like, they're so, not stubborn, but no, they believe in their truth, that they believe what they, and okay then.
Wow.
But I think that it's up to other people to really listen to their truth. And when you know that something's not right, or and something's not right, like, do better. When you know better, you do better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I for one am really grateful that you were on the documentary, and I don't think that you should be embarrassed or feel bad about it at all, because I think there's probably a lot of people that have like a small seed of doubt inside themselves on whether or not it's the right thing to do, and whether or not they should buy into the company. And I think you'll be really helpful in dissuading them from going a route where there's so much risk that they have to take on, while the company takes on none of the risk. And so mm-hmm. I think that it's awesome that you were in it. And
agreed.
Yeah, I'm grateful to have seen you there.
Oh, I really do appreciate hearing that. I think if anything, you know, good that's come out of it, it's just is that. So I really appreciate hearing that. Thank you.
People love to pretend that there are simple formulas for living your best life now. Eat this and you won't get sick. Manifest it and everything will work out. But there are some things you can choose and some things you can't. And it's okay that life isn't always getting better. I'm Kate Bowler, and on Everything Happens, I speak with kind, smart, funny people about life as it really is. Beautiful, terrible, and everything in between. Let's be human together. Everything Happens is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Can't get enough of your favorite Lemonada Media podcasts? By subscribing to Lemonada Premium today, you'll gain access to fun and inspiring bonus content from all of our podcasts across the Lemonada Media Network. As a subscriber, you can listen to never-before-heard interview excerpts, behind-the-scenes segments, and continue to uncover new ways to make life suck less through all of our exclusive subscriber audio. Check out a free trial of Lemonada Premium today in the Apple Podcast app by clicking on our podcast logo and then the subscribe button.
So that was so interesting. I'm so grateful she decided to come on the show. I feel like just in dissecting some of the things that she said and like how she really does feel like they need to apologize, there does seem to be this sort of feeling with this company in particular where they're just really not going to. It's not in their best sort of like financial interest to. It's in their best interest to just kind of blindly continue on pretending as if there's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Which states a whole new kind of dilemma, which is like, how do people heal and recover from situations where you're just never really going to get an apology? Like, that is just not coming.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to feel like that you have been fooled, you know, like someone that got to your brain and just like, you know, played around with you. So there's like this pride where you're like, you know, you don't want to talk about it. There's the shame involved, and Lauren talked about that a bit. But I think at the end of the day, it's like there's no shame in it, you know, like this can happen to anyone. And they really tapped in into this whole like not just American dream, but like we just happen to live in a country where in order for you to feel useful, you have to provide and you have to be part of the economy. And if you are a stay-at-home mom, they're basically telling you, like, you're not bringing any money to the table. Yes, you're raising the kids and you're doing so much, but no money is involved here. So to us, you're useless. And we have a way to make you useful, to make you, like, the person you want to be. So, I mean, that's how they usually get to them. And it's fucked up, obviously.
I mean, I hate to sound jaded, but I think I'm so used to being disappointed by the system that, like, this, again, that's why I'm not their demographic, because I would have been like, absolutely, I'm not paying you to make money. This doesn't even make sense from the jump.
Yeah. But that's all of us, right? You know, like even us who are not involved in these like MLMs or pyramid schemes, we feel like we have to be doing something all the time, which is why, I mean, personally, like sometimes I feel like I can't even rest on my days off because I feel like I have to be doing something. I have to be productive. I'm just like told that like, you know, I have to keep working. And, you know, when you feel that all the time, this is like becomes your whole life, you know, you want to change it. And LuLaRoe was that savior, you know?
Yeah, they're definitely, like, that's definitely one of the ways in which they're manipulative and predatory, which takes me to the fact of, like, they took advantage of you. And part of being taken advantage of is feeling at a loss, not just obviously monetarily like these people were, but in the way that you felt disrespected with no solution to that. And I think healing from something that you're never going to get vindication from, that you don't get justice from, that you don't have somebody on the other end saying, like, I made a mistake, is actually a pretty bitter pill that you have to swallow. And something that I admire about, you know, her is that she comes on the show and she's like, I'm going to move on. And moving on without an apology can be very difficult.
Yeah.
I know I've personally been in situations where, you know, after many years of therapy and many years of somebody telling me like, hey, like, you don't need this other person to say sorry. You don't need that other person to acknowledge what they have done for you to be able to acknowledge that you felt some kind of way about it. But it's definitely a harder process because apologies do offer some closure and they offer we both understood what actually happened, but not in this case.
Well, I mean, yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, like, I guess when it comes to apologies and forgiveness and all of that, you know, if it's not the people around you, if it's not, you're not getting an apology from the top, the only person that is left for you to forgive is really yourself at this point, you know? You just can't keep being upset at yourself. And I know it's upsetting and I know it sucks. And I know you like lost money, but at the end of the day, you know, it really happens to the best of us. Yeah.
I think that's the part that made me the most sad about the doc. And, you know, even when we're talking to Lauren, is that the shame these women felt, you know, whether it's, you know, the woman, I think Courtney, who, you know, purchased two vehicles and purchased her, you know, $40,000, you know, Louis Vuitton bag, you know, getting surgeries to lose weight because that's, you know, the Tijuana skinny, you know, chat that was happening that was encouraged supposedly by the top, and just them feeling so shameful. But it's like, no, give yourself some grace, be kind to yourself, because we've all fallen for something at some point in our life. Yeah. It's just, that's why they're at the top. They're good at what they do.
Yeah. And if it makes you feel any better, I once paid for to perform at an open mic, you know?
How much?
Like $5. And I still think about them to this day.
Yeah. Those are your $5, buddy.
Yeah. It really hurt. But, you know, at the end of the day, I chose to forgive myself and I moved on.
Yeah. I mean, all in all, looking at LuLaRoe specifically, it's like, I think it's like 50 lawsuits in. They abruptly like stopped their buyback policy because they're like claiming that the retailers are abusing it. They're still waiting for their money back. Like, overall, I think it is such a black and white issue that people should not feel ashamed. Like, they were fully taken advantage of. It's not just you being unable to sell. It's an actual institution that is like, that has defective legging issues, that has issues in terms of like the material that can't sustain their own growth. And they're just trying to pass on the blame onto the people who are trying really, really hard to make something happen for themselves. And I think that's the saddest part, you know, when you look at all the things that they've done in terms of like the McDyer lawsuit and the copyright infringement, like it just becomes hopefully in their minds, like clearer and clearer that from the very first moment they were dealing with a disingenuous company and that it wasn't necessarily them not being able to sell things, you know?
Yeah. And one last thing I'll say, there's Also, one more person who deserves an apology is Mario Lopez. Because they invited him in, and then in the documentary, they were like, yeah, man, we got him in. You know, he was under budget. It was like, we literally saved a lot of money just by getting him. It didn't cost us much. And if I was Mario Lopez watching that, I literally would not leave my home ever again. So, hey, Mario Lopez, forgive yourself.
Yeah, he deserved an apology. And they didn't just say under budget. They emphasized way under budget.
Yeah. They were like, this man is here Nothing. For drink tickets. He does not care. Yeah, he will do anything for money and company.
Oh, AC Slater.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mario Lopez.
I also want to invite everyone to go read the reviews on Amazon Prime Movies for this documentary. They are riddled with just the most exciting ideas about why this documentary sucks. You got to go read the one-star reviews.
Wait, what? What? I did not do this.
Did you not? Okay.
What does it say?
So I went in because, like, you can rate any show. So I, of course, looked at the one-star ones, because which other ones even really matter? So first of all, there's 231 global ratings. So 231 people actually rated it. And this one is my favorite because it's the most amount of people found it useful. Being 116 people were like, yeah, this is exactly what I thought about the show too. So she goes, is this show being financed from suing parties versus LuLaRoe? So right off the bat, she's on conspiracy theory watch. She's like, who funded this movie? And then it says, how come these women making six figures spent everything on luxury items and then blame the company they work for? And then she goes on to list 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 5 different things that are incorrect about the specific.
You should reply to that comment and say, hi, Deanne. Because that sounds like it's coming from Deanne and Mark Stidham directly.
Oh, absolutely.
No, at the very end, it says, disclaimer, I'm not associated with this company nor anyone. This is ironic. It's her. It's Deanne. Disclaimer, I'm not associated with this company nor anyone from these parties. My 2 cents comes from over 20 years of experience in marketing and management.
And running MLMs. That is it.
Let's go look up Deanne. She started exactly 20 years ago.
Yeah. And now, time for Sorry, Not Sorry. This week, California drivers owe me an apology. I've driven in a lot of states, in a lot of places, with a lot of highways. And I will say that Californians are the worst drivers I have ever encountered in my life. And for that, they owe me an apology because I'm scared I'm going to die on these roads.
No, I agree. I never drive there. It sucks. And yeah, I don't like it. I hate it. I thought what I had to say about California drivers was going to be more interesting. But hey, that's what came out.
I would like to ask for an apology humbly from Unfamiliar Allergens. Because I'm a swole bitch. I'm swollen, honey. I did something out in the world that has caused me to actively look like a chipmunk. And both of my cheeks are so swollen.
Oh, but you're so adorable.
Oh, thank you so much. I look fully like Cupid. Like I'm about to shoot you in your face and you're going to fall in love. I think that's how Cupid works.
And you just came back from Mexico, right?
Yeah.
Do you think you're allergic to the states? That's what I think.
Okay, that was your theory. And honestly, I really appreciate that because I don't currently have insurance. And I think my body was like, you know what, fuck it, let's stick it to her. Let's do something crazy. She needs to feel alive right now, even if it's through pain. So, yeah, I would like for the U.S. of America, the known allergen, to apologize to me.
A person who owes me an apology this week, she's in the next room, so I'm just going to say it out loud. My girlfriend owes me an apology because earlier today I had a tweet that was shared on the Instagram story of Sharon Stone, you know?
Cool.
Yeah, I know. She's been on TV for a while.
Big star. Oh, yeah. I love her.
You've heard of her. And I was so excited. So I showed her the Instagram story and She said, "Who is Sharon Stone?"
Wow.
Yeah.
Blasphemy.
Yeah. So not only she wasn't excited, she was like, you know, she made me feel old.
She doesn't know the Stone family, the Stone heiress, the youngest Stone.
Yeah. Cold Stone Steve Austin in the family as well.
The family Stone. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, you're like, you know, 26. You're not really that younger than me. You have no right. So, you know, I love her, but...
What a flex she did on you.
I know. She said you're old.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
wow.
Accept
no, in certain terms.
I'm Sorry is a Lemonada Media original. The show is produced by Alex McCohen. Supervising producer is Chrissy Pease. Our executive producers are Stephanie Whittles-Wax and Jessica Cordova Kramer. Our mix is by Kat Yore, and theme music was composed by Xander Singh. If you like this show, please rate and review. And please don't cancel us. You can find out more about our show at Lemonada Media on all social platforms or follow us on Instagram at @I'mSorry_podcast. We'll be back next week. And until then, be nice, play fair, and always say I'm sorry. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere? And suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time. Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people. And we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Join us on Archetypes, a dynamic podcast hosted by Megan, the Duchess of Sussex, as she digs into the labels that try to hold women back. In each intimate and candid conversation, Megan is joined by guests like Serena Williams, Mariah Carey, Paris Hilton, Issa Rae, and Trevor Noah as they delve into the roots of countless common descriptors of women, like diva, crazy, dumb blonde, and the B word, and redefine and reclaim each identity along the way. The complete season of Archetypes is out now wherever you get your podcasts.